The Wilson Rush Podcast with your host, Wilson Rush. Also with T. Lil, Vaughn Wilson, and C. Rush. What up, Detroit? 7 miles. Rev City, your world. DJ Cliff. We the best, the Chemist Music Group.
Yes, sir. Happy Saturday to everybody. Hope it's a beautiful weekend wherever you are. I got the usual suspects back at it again. C Rush actually filming this one off on 7 Mile right now as we speak, man. What's going on, C Rush?
Feel good to be on 7 Mile. You know, you smell the Coney Islands. You know, smell the barbecue and the rain. So you know, it's good to be back at home.
Yeah, it ain't nothing like smelling a Coney dog, even if you don't like them. I mean, you go in there and order something else, but nothing like smelling a Coney dog. T-Wheel, man, we know you in the suburbs now, but how's things going in the outskirts?
Oh, man, beautiful, man. It's a nice little, you know, nice little rainy day here, you know, here in East Point. But everything's looking up, man. Just well prepared for this show today. Here we go.
Yeah, we definitely got a good one on the Wilson Rush Podcast today. We're going to talk about Andrew Bynum and his controversial fan comment that he made, and everyone thinks it's a shot at the Lakers. But when we get to this, I personally think it's a shot at the Philadelphia Sixers as well. And we're going to tackle this PED discussion because we think that we definitely have to address this issue. This has been the headline news basically all week. And the NCAA is cracking down on some of these football hits. That hit that Clowney put on Michigan running back in Outback Bowl, a referee came out and basically said, hey, he'd be thrown out of the game for doing that. And that was one of, I know I'm only 27 years old, but that's the best tackle that I have ever seen. So I hope guys are not getting thrown out left and right for hard hits. But first, we're going to go to T-Wheel, and we're going to start with some of the NFL teams to watch out for this year. And the one thing I personally love about the NFL is there is a lot of parity. You know, you can pick the top teams, but at the end of the day, you really don't know who's going to be that Super Bowl champ, because I don't think a lot of people would have picked the Ravens before the season started. T-Will, let's go to you. Who are you looking out for this year?
Well, fine. Starting over in the NFC, the NFC is just pretty tough at the top. You know, I think teams like the 49ers, I think the 49ers are, to me, the number one team in the NFC. They made some crucial offseason moves with extending some of their guys that's currently on their roster. They had great impact this past season. They also added Anquan Boldin from the Baltimore Ravens. At first, I really didn't see the significance of a lot of people were talking about this as being a really great signing. I thought it was a pretty solid one, but with Crabtree going down and going to be out with that Achilles injury, I think this really, you know, keeps them in that top spot right there. I think really secondary teams like to fill that number two spot coming out of the NFC. I think you have a few teams you can look at. You know, the Seattle Seahawks. You know, with Russell coming back and running that offense there, you know, that offense maturing and they're bolstering up that defense, they're going to be tough. And playing in Seattle was always tough. And then you look at the Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers out there. I really like the Packer team because they added, you know, an aspect of the running game, Lacy from Alabama. But the thing about them is they lost some key guys out that locker room, some key veterans. You're talking about a Charles Woodson on the defensive side of the ball. You talk about Greg Jennings, leaving the Packers also. So they lost quite a bit, but they do have some young talent. But that team that's going to pick that number two spot up, I believe, this year in the NFC is going to come out of Atlanta. I think those Falcons are really going to get over the hump this year with Matty Ice down there. That defense still looks solid down there. And to me, adding Steven Jackson to that running game down there is going to get these guys over the hump. You know, they had Michael Turner and things like that, but he was that big bruising back. But now Steven Jackson, to me, he's a he's a Pro Bowl type back. So I think that'll get them over the hump. And in the AFC, you know, I think Peyton Manning's at the top of the mountaintop over there in the AFC. So I do think that the Denver Broncos will come out the AFC, and no secondary teams over there. I will put the Patriots up there, but the loss of Wes Welker to the Broncos hurts. You know, Aaron Hernandez, Gronkowski going to be out at the beginning of the season. I think they had a lot of losses in a lot of key areas over there. So I think the Patriots will be in the mix, but I think really coming out of the AFC, I think it's a no-brainer. It's the Denver Broncos.
Now, T. Will, let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks here for a second. You said that defense is going to be solid again. Do you still believe that it's going to be solid with them losing their defensive coordinator?
Well, that's the thing. Yes, when you lose your defensive coordinator, guys, if you bring in someone else and you are running and they're running the similar type stuff, I think you're going to be fine. I think when you overhaul that thing and you may go from a 4-3 to a 3-4, you know, now you talk about changing personnel and things like that, but the guy they brought in is going to be running some of the similar things, so the similar type defense. So it's going to be a similar scheme, and they pretty much have the same defense coming back, and they made some key additions this offseason. So I look for these guys to be even more, to be even better than they were last year.
Oh, so even better. Okay. Let's talk about Russell Wilson. I mean, do you expect to see the same type of statistics? Do you expect to see a sophomore slump? I mean, what do you expect to see from the offensive side of the ball? Because I agree with you. I think their defense kind of flew under the radar because of Russell Wilson. That's just my opinion.
Well, yes, I expect Russell's number to be similar to what they were last year, you know, with the running game and in the running game and also in the passing game. You know, I don't expect him to take a huge dip, to have that sophomore slump as some quarterbacks do have in this league. I think he's a very well intelligent kid. I think the numbers that he had last year weren't really gaudy or anything. He just kind of got the job done. So it's not like he has these huge expectations where he threw for 5,000 yards. And this year, if he throws for 3,500, his team's not going to win as many games. So I don't think he had real gaudy numbers. As long as he continues to get the job done, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I got one more NFC question for you. I'll save the AFCs for C. Rush, but you talked about Aaron Rodgers, and one thing I want to ask you, you know, we always see Tom Brady wide receivers change. We always see his tight ends change, and it seems like he throws his ball to anybody, and he makes a superstar out of anybody. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is that guy as well? Like at the beginning of the season, if we don't know this guy's name he's throwing to, do you think he's that guy as well, T. Will, that he can make a superstar out of anybody?
I do think he's that guy as well. Not just being that guy, but the thing about Brady is when Brady's doing it, he's doing it within that system. And no one knows McCarthy's system better than Aaron Rodgers. So I believe they're really similar in those ways, and I think we'll see it this year with him throwing to some guys that we may be like, you know, who is this guy, you know, who's having this great season. I think we'll see some similar things that we've seen Brady do in the past when he had evolving door of receivers.
Yeah, it just seems like whoever Tom Brady throws that ball to, it just seems like they're a superstar the next couple weeks. So but anyway, let's get going to see Rush. What you expect to see this year, C. Rush?
Well, I'll start in the AFC. Like T. Will said, the Denver Broncos are the cream of the crop. And you add a Wes Welker to that team, you're giving Peyton Manning another offseason. So his surgery that he may have had last year is getting better. His arm strength is going to come back. You know, they did lose Willis McGahee, but they got no Sean Moreno coming back, and also drafted Monty Ball in that backfield. So it's going to be that stretch that they run is going to be deadly this year, especially when you add Welker with Decker. So that's going to be tough. The only issue is losing Elvis Dumervil. That's going to be huge. You know, it was an issue with the restricted free agent thing, and they ended up losing him to Baltimore. So. Then you got the cloud hanging over their head with Von Miller. Even though it may be four games may be crucial, you know, so that they should be able to bounce back from there. But I see them as the top dog in that division, in that conference. Another team it's the Houston Texans. You know, can Matt Schwab finally put them over the top? You know, they've been there, been nipping at it. But now, as we all know in football, that window does not stay open forever. You know, Andre Johnson's not getting any younger. You know, Arian Foster is in the prime of his career, in my opinion. So you have to get it done now. You know, you got Brian Cushing coming back from that ACL surgery. So they have to get it done this year. And they're not playing in a stellar division, the AFC South, you know. So they should win that hands down again. Another team that I'm really curious to see about are the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, same thing. They've been in the playoffs two straight years, lose to the Texans two straight years. Is Andy Dalton that guy to get them over the top? You know, they have a young core, A.J. Green, phenomenal running back, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis at the running back as well, or at the running back, A.J. Green receiver. So can they take that step and get over that hump? Those younger teams, it could be a passing of the torch here with all the stuff that's going on with the Patriots. But like you said, Tom Brady, it doesn't matter who he's throwing to, but how long can this go on? You know, this has been a decade of dominance for them, and it's been went from offense, defensive dominated to offensive dominated. Now they're going to probably switch back to defense because the defense on paper looks excellent, in my opinion. But now, who are his weapons? You know, Stephen Ridley at running back, Danny Woodhead's there. But on the edges, he doesn't really have too many weapons, in my opinion. So, you know, I look out for those four teams to really make some noise. And you really can't discount the Baltimore Ravens because they are the defending champions. They did lose eight, nine starters coming off that defense, but you cannot discount the champions as well.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, C. Rush. If you give Tom Brady a great defense, that's gonna be trouble. I personally don't care who he's really throwing the ball to. I mean, if you give him a great defense, he's going to get you 24, 28 points at least. So if you give him a great defense, that's going to get ugly in Boston, in my opinion. But see, Rush, let's talk about Houston a little bit more. Great defense, a great balanced offense. Is this their year?
In my opinion, it has to be. You know, last year, I thought that they had a heck of a run. I believe they rattled off 14 wins last year. But now it's only so long you can keep going to the same spot before that dynasty ends in the NFL. We all know this. You know, teams make a good 4-year run and free agency and things happen. You know, so this has to be their year. And to what you say about Tom Brady, that's very true. That's a scary thing. If that defense is like it was when he first got there, when he first was installed as quarterback, when they had Teddy Bruschi, Ty Law, they had all those guys making Peyton Manning's life hell, then that would be scary. But to go back to the Texans, they have to do something this year. This can't go on forever. And Matt Schwab has to prove that, okay, the first time they went to the playoffs, they had TJ Yates starting because Schwab was hurt. But now he was there last year, and if he's there this year, he has to get it done.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting football season like it always is. But I agree. I got to look out for Houston. And see, Rush, like you said, the division is really not that good. And the Patriots division is terrible as well. So I look at those teams that do very well this year. And the Denver Broncos, I got to be honest with you, that's my most underrated division. I think the Chargers will be better. I think the Chiefs will be better. But I still do believe that Peyton Manning will find a way to win a division. But I think that division is going to be the toughest one in football this year. I really do believe that. I think they've made some great coaching changes. There was always talent in that division. But in my opinion, the right leaders weren't in place, and I think that has changed this year. But, T. Will, I want to go back to you on this one, and I want to start with you is you didn't say Philadelphia Eagles, okay? So what I want to ask you is do you believe that they will make the playoffs this year?
No, I can't say that the Eagles will make the playoffs this year. You say the AFC West is your most, you think is going to be one of the strongest divisions, if not the. I think this NFC East is like no one really knows what's going on in the NFC East. I mean, there's a lot of just hidden variables. We don't know anything what we're going to get from Philly. We don't know what style of offense or defense. We don't know how they're going to look. Are they going to look like Oregon did on Saturdays? You know, with the Redskins, RG3 coming back, are they going to change the offense? You know, there's some unknown variables there. You know, in Dallas, who's calling plays there? I mean, I don't know what's going on. The head coach, but what other decisions can he make? I don't know what's going on in Dallas. You know, so, I mean, the safest bet in the NFC East is like the Giants right now, but I mean they lost to Miles Bradshaw, you know, in free agency and things like that. So I mean that NFC East, I don't know who's coming out of that thing right now. I mean it's like up in the air with that division right there. But if I had to pick somebody over there, fine, I would have to say the safest pick would be the Giants.
Yeah, I don't know either. Like, I have no idea. See, Rush, I'll throw it to you. I mean, T will say he would go with the Giants coming out of that division. I mean, would you put them in front of the Skins right now?
I honestly would have to, you know, because you don't know what you're gonna get out of Redskins. We don't know. We know that the Giants, after a down year, they come back and have a great year. We can't discount that defensive front line that they have as well. You know, they still have Justin Tuck. They still have St. Paul. They still have a good defensive line. Maybe not as dominant as it used to be, losing OC, but I still think they can be dominant. Now the thing about the Redskins, you have Arakpo coming back. You know, that's huge. Him and Kerrigan only played what, maybe 4 games last year. So the Redskins are adding a lot defensively that they didn't have last year. And I want to see how healthy they are. Injuries kind of derailed what could have been a magical season for the Redskins. So if they stay healthy, they can be there with the Giants. That's the only reason I would not put them ahead, because they've shown patterns of just being inconsistently unhealthy. You know, you don't know who's starting, you don't know who's playing. And another thing about to jump divisions real quick. Percy Harvin, he may not be playing this year, you know, so that's taking away one of Russell's weapons that I just seen today. You got to get a second opinion on that hip, but that looked like a steal for them. Now the Vikings are looking like geniuses for getting rid of him. So,
right. For our listeners that don't know, these two gentlemen sleep with NFL Network on. They watch it at least 10 hours a day. So, July 27th, I'm going to put you guys right here on the spot, and we'll start with you, T-Wheel. Who went in the Super Bowl this year?
Wow, that's a bold prediction right there, man, and coming in July. But I will say this. I think we see Harbaugh go to the Super Bowl, you know, against those Broncos, and I see Harbaugh winning those 49ers. I see the 49ers taking it this year.
Okay. I mean, hey, if one of your picks – don't make the playoffs, so, you know, we'll let you change it up here at the Wilson Rush Podcast. We'll talk about you, but we'll let you change it. See, Rush, who you got? Who you got winning the Super Bowl?
Man, I have the Denver Broncos playing against the Atlanta Falcons. And I have Matty Ice hosting that trophy this year.
First of all, you guys are talking high on Matty Ice. I mean, this guy got to do something in the playoffs before I even pick him to make it to the second round. Like, wow. I mean, you guys are giving Matty Ice a lot of love. I definitely don't see him coming anywhere close to Super Bowl. I don't care if he wins 13 games during the year. I don't believe it until I see him pick up some wins in the playoffs. I'm sorry. I can't do that one. I don't care how many games he wins wins during the season. But I got to be honest. Right now, I'm going to go with the Houston Texans. I really am. I like guys that keep things in place, that keep those core guys in place, that keeps those coaches in place. That's why I'm picking the Texans, and I think they'll get a lot of confidence beating up on people during a year in the division. All right, let's move on to our second topic of the day. I'm pretty sure we've all seen it, C-Rush, that hit that Clowney put on our running back in the Outback Bowl. I mean, he stuck him right. But the NCAA this year, they're saying that, hey, he would have got ejected for that this upcoming year. I mean, do you think that we're getting soft, or are you an advocate for player safety, C-Rush?
I'm an advocate for player safety, but that's soft. That's terrible. You know, since Pop Warner in ESFL league, you've been taught a certain way how to hit. You know, he wasn't leading with his helmet. What are you supposed to do when the running back drops his shoulders? You know, you're already aiming at the chest. Helmet on the chin strap. That was a great hit. That was an ideal textbook hit. So I don't, just because his helmet flew off may have exaggerated it somewhat, but that is no face mask in the chest. I don't know what else they want him to do. You know, you want to take his knees out, you know, and possibly end his career. You know, it's football is a game to whereas anything can happen. You know, you may be trying to hit him at the shoulders or in the chest, but the running back is taught to drop his shoulder and brace for impact. So what do you want these players to do? You know, is no right way to correct it. All you can say is, okay, no headshots. Okay, great. No headshots. But if you look at the tape and look at the head, he wasn't going for his head. This is not like a John Lynch type forearm shiver to the head. You know, this is not Lawrence Taylor grabbing somebody by the throat. You know, he wrapped him up. It was a huge hit, but he wrapped him up. So I don't understand why they would come out and say this and he would be ejected, you know, because sometimes referees may be influenced by the outcome of the hit. You know, helmet flying off, I'm going to throw a flag. It looked violent. Yeah, football is a violent sport, you know, so even routine plays look violent when you get on a higher level. You know, those same hits when we were in Little League, but now you're adding more weight and grown people to it. Those same hits are still the same hits in college. So I just don't think that is right that they come out on this hit like this. I understand player safety, protect the head, protect the kneecaps of the quarterbacks, but you got to have some place to tackle.
Now, see, Rush, now do you think – now, obviously, coaches didn't make this rule. A football coach would never say, hey, that's too much. Do you think the problem here is that people that are not involved in the game are making the rules?
Yeah, I think that's a huge problem. You know, if they got a committee of their peers and actually thought this out, maybe it'd be a better resolution. You know, that's why I say, like, people who are just sitting behind here or just doctors who are just looking at tests and this, they don't know what it's like going through practice and, okay, form tackling, knowing how to hit, you know, because as much as the defensive lineman gives off, some of these running backs are giving back. So they have no clue. They're looking at it from one side. They're looking at it from the defensive side alone, from the defensive side alone. And that's, for one, that's unfair. And for two, these guys in lab coats have never played a down, even on Madden or college football or video game. So you can't tell people how to play the game when you've never played the game yourself. Granted, you want to protect from injuries, but what other precautions would you like these young men to go through? Would you like these coaches to do?
Yeah, I gotta agree with you. I mean, I think the coaches should be able to make rules like this, in my opinion, because obviously the guys that are making the rules are not involved in the game. And like you said, coaches have been teaching techniques since Little League, and now all of a sudden in one off season, you're saying, hey, we got to relearn how to tackle. So, I mean, T-Wheel, are you okay with this rule? Because obviously you're a football coach. Are you okay with this rule, or is this just a cupcake rule to you?
Well, just for the record, fellas, you know, I'm for safety in every sport. Okay, I don't think there's a place in football to intentionally try to injure or hurt someone. With that being said, fine, this rule stinks. You know, the game of football was meant to be played hard, fast, and physical. If you don't give, you know, full effort in all three of those categories, or don't play with all three of those tools, then you open yourself up to possibly, you know, getting hurt on the football field. It's a very physical and violent game, and it was meant to be played that way. You know, so injuries do happen in football, and that's part of the game. And that's understood by all parties involved, okay? All the players, they understand the risk that they take every time they walk on that football field. I don't really like gray area, and to me, this is a perfect example of the NCAA swimming in gray, okay? it has to be touch or tackle football, not tackle football plus a few exceptions. The Clowney hit will go down as one of the best hits in football history to me. And now they're trying to eliminate that. Every athlete knows the risk every time they step on that field. And to me, you know, that's just good enough for me if they want to continue to play. Don't put restrictions on these players. Let them play, you know, this violent game to the best of their ability. As C. Rush was over there talking, fine, I pulled up the hit again on YouTube. There was nothing illegal about the hit. That's how you coach your defensive line up, you know, dip, rip, you know, get into the backfield, shed that block. And he didn't lead with his head. Nothing illegal about the hit. It was a violent physical hit. That's what it was. And to be honest with you, Fon, I don't know how to coach any other way. I coach my guys to be as aggressive that you possibly can within the realms of the game. That's legal. You know, and when you have to adjust your coaching for it, I mean, that's a tough one, because do you tell a player not to go full throttle? Because now you're opening up him up to injury, you know, to possibly get hurt on the field. So I don't like the rule at all. I think you get your guys ready in the offseason in that weight room to get stronger, faster, bigger, you know, whatever the case may be. You put them on that field, and we all know what can possibly happen in between, you know, the snap of that ball and that last whistle on each play. We all know what can happen. Let those guys play. You know, this rule here, I don't understand it. I mean, I don't. It's football. You get hit hard. I mean, I don't know. If they want anything less than that, then we should just have flag football. But no, don't tell us we can't hit. Don't hit somebody that hard. That sounds like somebody mama.
Yeah, if we. I wasn't expecting that. Sorry, guys. But if, man, you made me lose my train of thought. But if it would have been flag all the way up, man, I would have stayed in football a little bit longer as well. But T-Phil, let me ask you this, though. Now, as you know, man, in college football, the highest level, there's a lot of speed, T. There's a lot of collisions. Now, do you think that this is going to be a disaster because referees are going to have to make a judgment call? Like, he got to make a judgment call to throw this guy out the game. So he better be right. So do you think that this is going to be a disaster altogether, that we're leaving it up to the Zebras to make the right call?
It's a disaster waiting to happen, Fon, because now it's up to the interpretation of the refs, their judgment, okay, their judgment call. Man, this rule could possibly cost universities and football programs millions of dollars down the line, you know, because, you know, the ejection of players, winning and losing, now you may not be bowl eligible. This thing can be the beginning of something big, you know, and not a positive light for the NCAA. And I just don't like it, because you're telling football players to be a football player just not that hard. And I don't know how to. I've been coaching for a long time, you know, basketball and football. I don't know how to teach a kid to put his best foot forward. Just don't do it that hard. I mean, that's rough. That's rough. I don't know.
Not T. Will. Now let's just try to meet. Even though this wouldn't be meeting halfway, but let's just try to say we could meet halfway. So let's just say you're the college coach. Would you rather this happen? So say, for example, if it's the third quarter with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, and a guy makes a hit and it's questionable. Do you think that, okay, instead of just kicking him out the game, let me make the decision as a referee, do you think that they should say, okay, let's compromise. Let's review it at the end of the game. Let's review it. If it was an illegal hit, now let's suspend him for the rest of the time remaining in that game if it was an illegal hit. Do you think that could be somewhat of a compromise instead of me just saying, well, I thought I saw that being illegal. Get out the game.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, they can come to some kind of compromise, but still, at the same time, it's like, what's the NCAA, what's their end game in this, in bringing this rule in? I want to know what they're trying to accomplish by this. I mean, are they trying to take away illegal hits? Because if they say they're trying to take away illegal hits, then why would Clowney be ejected in that game if that rule was in place? Because nothing was illegal about that. It was illegal how he did Vincent Smith on that hit, but outside of that, I mean, nothing was illegal about it. So my thing is, what's their end game? Is it they don't want people to get hit that hard? I mean, I don't know what their end game is. I don't know what they're trying to do or where they're trying to go with it. But Like I said, at the end of the day, I just think they're opening up this box that could lead to some negative things down the line.
See, Rush, real quick, man, do you think this rule is a one and done rule? Like, if we do it for a year and it's a disaster, and they say, "All right, enough with this rule."
Yeah, this rule's stupid, in my opinion. I mean, you can't change something that's been around forever. And like I said, these kids are gonna be playing wrap up by the waist now, you know, and you can't do that with these big athletes, you know, because at the end of the day, they're playing for their school, they're playing for their pride, they're playing for millions of dollars either on this level or the NFL level trying to get seen. So, you know, you can't. The only way to maybe help it out is, like you said, review it, but no, this will be done. This be over with at the end of this year.
Yeah, because I mean, even the NFL guys, there were some hits this year. And it was just free 15 yards. Just free 15 yards. He went like, man, that was a pretty good tackle. Or the right receiver touches the ball and the defensive back light him on fire. And it was like, oh, 15-yard penalty. He hit him too hard. Like, it's not even, they call it unnecessary roughness, but the penalty should be he hit him too hard. I mean, I've watched a lot of football, and I've seen it happen many times this NFL season, just like I'm sure you guys did. It was just the defender trying to dislodge the ball from the right receiver, and it was just, oh, he hit him too hard. 15-yard penalty, automatic first down. It happened a lot on third down, so that was pretty tough for me. But yeah, I gotta agree with C. Rush. I think this will be a one and done rule. There's already a lot of guys, a lot of college coaches complain about it. So I think this is one and done. But like T. Will said, we're all here about player safety. But how do you tell a defender not to go full throttle? All right, it's that halfway point, so it's definitely time to jump into that freestyle. And my notes say T. Will is up to bat first. Is that true? Going for 3 wins in a row?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, T. Will, let's start with you on this one. There's some speculation, T. Will, that LeBron James is done playing USA basketball. He'll be 31 in the next Olympics, I believe. You know, thumbs up if you think he should hang it up, or thumbs down if he need to get his butt out there.
Well, first off, man, big ups to my man, the CEO, man, Chris Davis over at the agency, baby, making it happen over there. But I forgot which one was thumbs up and thumbs down, fine. But whichever one that say that LeBron needs to get his butt back out there and play for Team USA, that's what I'm rolling with, okay? LeBron needs to go out there, man. I think the best of the best should be out there. Okay, when you put that USA jersey on, when we go out there and represent our country, guys, okay, we should have the best, okay, not the best college players, but the best that the United States has to offer, you know, should be standing there in the forefront, you know, the LeBron James, you know, the Dwight Howards, all of those guys, they should be standing there in the forefront, you know, and they should be pushing people out the way to get to the forefront. Look at Ginobili. He's played in every national thing for his country because it's a pride thing. You know, it's your country. You know, and it's a privilege to play for your country. Not everyone can say they were in competition or in sport for their country or served their country. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I think he should, as long as he's one of the faces of our NBA, of basketball in the United States, he should be over there representing our country.
Thanks, T. Will. I'm gonna have to fire this producer, man. He didn't slide me that card, man. The freestyle round is definitely always, as always, brought to you by the Chris L. Davis Sports Agency, helping clients with their brand and getting agents overseas and contracts everywhere around the world. So C. Rush, T. Will says thumbs down on this one. He needs to get his butt out there. LeBron James will be 31. C. Rush, what you think, man?
I'm gonna go thumbs up, and here's why. He's playing for something more, you know, not to take away from your country. Your country is a beautiful thing. I love the fact that we can wake up free. I love the fact that people are wearing red, white, and blue. But at the end of the day, he's concerned about his NBA legacy. And let's not take for granted health and age with the style of play that he has, you know. Michael Jordan won 2 gold medals and was done. You know, we're not China. We're not Nigeria. we have the best basketball players in the world. So what's wrong with a 23-year-old Kevin Durant, who's already second in tier, face of the NBA, becoming the face of NBA basketball? We have a lot of young talent, Kyrie Irving, you know, a lot of young guys coming up. So these guys, they've done their 2 years. They reestablished USA basketball. Sometimes it's great to pass the torch, the same way the Dream Team passed the torch to Penny and Shaq. Shaq wasn't on that Dream Team, but Shaq was on that other team in 96, you know. All those players didn't come back. Karl Malone, yeah, he came back. David Robinson, yeah, he came back. But we had Hakeem, we had younger talent coming back and playing, you know. You can only do so much before at the same time. You got to think about your longevity in this NBA, because that's what you're judged by. People aren't saying, well, Charles Barkley got a gold medal. No. People are saying Charles Barkley don't got no ring. That's what people are saying. So why not protect yourself? I love the fact that he dedicated 10 years for his country, because it's a 2 years before and then all the way during their practice. You know, I love the fact that he did that. But if he wants to solidify his legacy in this NBA that we have, it would be in his betterment to protect his body and not play 11 months out the year.
That's another good one, man. But I just, if he doesn't play and we don't win, he would be hated even more. I mean, he's got to play. I mean, he's only 31. I know Kobe tore his Achilles this year, but I mean, a lot of that had to do with that the Lakers were just bad this year. But I mean, Kobe Bryant played. You know, he's not a young pup anymore. So I got to go thumbs down, man. You're 31, man. You need to play. I mean, even if you don't play big minutes, I mean, if things get tight, man, you got to get out there. So I got to go thumbs down on that one. See, Rush, let's start with you on this one. Let's talk about Derrick Rose, man. In an interview, he said flat out, you know, when he healthy, he the best player in the NBA. Now, not if you believe it or T will believe it. Thumbs up if you think he actually believes it.
Thumbs up. I really do truly believe he believes he's the best player in the NBA, because, you know, he had the Bulls on the ropes. He was coming off. I mean, he had the Heat on the ropes. I'm sorry. He was coming off an MVP season, and he fell just a little short, and he may feel slighted that, okay, he didn't play last year. You know, he's looking at how his team's producing, and he thinks, heck, if I was playing, I would have beat him. So if you want to be great in anything, you have to think you're the greatest. And he's not wrong in his mind for saying that. Maybe to most basketball people, because even unlike most, some people do think he's the best player in the NBA, and that's their opinion. You know, so he's at least in discussion, but in his own mind and his own heart, he believes he's the best player in the NBA. So, you know, you can't deny somebody who's that young, has already won an MVP, and puts a team, his own city, on his back and has taken them to the cusp of an NBA championship. And let's not forget how explosive he is as a player. So he has every right to believe that he's the best player in the NBA, whether he is or not. By us three is totally different, but in his mind he believes he is, and he has a valid point. And he has a fan base that believes so.
T. Will, are you buying this, or you think this is just a rah rah speech for the fans?
Definitely, I'm going thumbs down. I don't believe it, and he don't believe it either. I'm just gonna be honest with y'all. This is rah rah for the fans. To be honest with you, you know. He may feel that he has a great skill set, but, I mean, breaking it down by position, you know, is he the best point guard? Is he the best one at his position? You know, why would he come out and say he's the – I mean, he's going to tell – he wants the fans to know that he's on a high level mentally. Okay, yes, I'm the best player, you know. But realistically, you know, I mean, what has he done to be considered the best player? You know, has he went out and put a C on his back and won a championship? You know, that'll deem you as one of the best players, you know, as the best player, you know, and like I said, is he the best player at his position in the league right now? And that's questionable by some guys. So, and the thing about professional sports is, it's about what have you done for me lately or recently? Well, I haven't seen him play in over a year, so Derrick Rose is in the back of my mind. You know, if LeBron was out for over a year, then I would say, okay, maybe the best player is down. You know, but when Derrick Rose got hurt, I didn't say the best player in the NBA just went down, and I don't think a lot of people did either.
I mean, that's a good point, T. I don't think he's the best player in the NBA either, but I think he actually believes that, though. I really do. I think C. Rush brings up a good point. I mean, he's a competitor. Why would he not think he's the best player in the NBA? Why would he not? I know he hasn't played in over a year, but he thinks he can get back to MVP form, and he thinks he's going to be the best player in the NBA. And I think he actually does believe that. And like C. Rush said, there's some people out here that say, hey, he is the best player in the NBA. But anyway, let's go to the tiebreaker here. Let's take things back to T-Wheel, and let's talk about my boy Lane Kiffin. Now, as we all know, it's been reported at Media Day, the AD say, hey, relax, everybody, relax. Lane Kiffin is not on the hot seat. Relax. Thumbs up if you believe the athletic director, T-Wheel, or thumbs down if you think not even close.
Well, I do not believe the athletic director. I have to say thumbs down. And the reason I don't believe the athletic director is because it's this right here. What does the athletic director have to gain by saying, you know what, my football coach, which my program under my athletic department that brings in the most money, by saying my head coach is on the hot seat? He has nothing to gain, and he has everything to lose by saying that. Okay, he can lose money. He can lose interest in the program. He can lose recruits. So he has everything to lose by saying Lane Kiffin's on the hot seat. He has nothing to gain. Even if Lane Kiffin is on the hot seat, you know, that's fine, and it'll be handled at the appropriate time. But, you know, by him to come out and say it's nothing to gain. You know, it's nothing to gain and everything to lose.
C-Rush, T-Wheel goes, he goes thumbs down on this one. What do you think about this?
So let me get this correct. Thumbs up is saying that he actually stands by his coach?
The AD said Lane Kiffin is not on the hot seat. And mm-hmm. T-Wheel said thumbs down. He think he actually is. So thumbs up if you believe that he's not on the hot seat.
I'm gonna go thumbs up, and here's why. To take what T-Wheel said, you know, if we were talking about it on our last podcast, saying, hey, maybe he's on the hot seat, maybe this, maybe that, you don't think these high school recruits are listening to that, saying, man, why should I go to USC? He may not be there, even though he's put players there. So he's coming out and backing his coach, backing his program, and backing up everything. So recruits, don't worry, Lane Kiffin will be here. Transfers, don't worry, Lane Kiffin will be here. You know, he's bringing in top class after top class. The product may not match up with the record, but Lane Kiffin is putting them in the best position. Lane Kiffin is putting them out there to win ball games. You know, when you bring in top recruits, you can't play the game for them, but you know what? He's sending players to the NFL. You know, even at Tennessee, he's bringing interest to the program. You know, it's something about his charisma that make players want to play for him. Not just the allure of USC, that has a lot to do with it, but you know, when you have him come into your house and he has rings, you know, from the Pete Carroll regime. You know, that AD is just coming out saying, hey, he's my guy. Nobody worry. We're okay. Don't listen to the rumors or anything. And he believes that.
Yeah, that's my guy too, C-Rush. But if he don't come close to 9 or 10 wins, I think I think this will be his last year. And he does have a lot of charisma. But, I mean, I got to go thumbs down and agree with T-Will on this one. I think that the AD is saying this to protect the program. But bottom line, if USC don't get it done, there will be a new coach in California. And I really do believe that. So, C-Rush, you better step your game up next time, man, because that's three in a row.
Three in a row. Three in a row. As you know, yo, three in a row that I just scored. If you listen to Wilson Rush, you bet not be bored.
Come on, C-Rush, step it up, baby.
Hey, I was in Rockin' the Hard Place with Lane Kiffin. I didn't believe that.
Oh, man. All right, fellas. Now, we don't talk a lot of baseball on this show. I mean, we don't. But we gotta talk about these PED situations. The reason why I want to talk about it is because these guys get some very big contracts, C-Rush and T-Wheel. They get a lot of great contracts. And then once they get caught, they get suspended or whatever happens, and then they sign another contract. So let's just be honest here. And I want to start with you, C-Rush. Would you, and I want to get personal here. Would you go ahead and take some PEDs for $100 million and then get caught and say, well, hey, I'm sorry. I'll take my suspension, but I still got a sports car. My rims are still spinning and my deck's still popping out.
Well, I'm gonna have to say no. I couldn't do it because you know why? You're looked at differently. You know, you got kids looking up to you growing up. You know, you got kids that look up to A-Rod who disrespect him now. You got kids who look up to Ryan Braun. You had Aaron Rodgers step out there for him, and now he's like, man, I can't believe this dude would say that. Yeah, he's still paid, but at the same time, are you gonna lose your self respect? You know, money is money. Guaranteed. $50 million, $100 million, I'm still living good. So, you know, money is not the end all be all. At the same time, you want to have the respect of your peers. You want to be able to say, hey, I can get into the Hall of Fame. You know, if you're playing for your legacy, 10 years, 20 years down the road, whether you blow all your money on sports cars, rims, women, drugs, whatever, is your face, do you have a bust in Cooperstown? You know, is your face there? A-Rod's won't be there. Barry Bonds won't be there. You know, Rafael Palmeiros won't be there. Roger Clemens won't be there. But these are players who got paid in our lifetime, you know. But you got players who doing it the right way, and they will be there. I just don't agree you should sell your soul for millions, because people do it all the time, and what's that getting you? You're losing the self-respect of your family, your peers, and then you're living up under a microscope. Yeah, you'll get paid again, but at to what cost? You know, so I just think that if you do it the right way, good things will come. You know, it's not I can't say it's not that much of a difference, but you know, it's money is money. So I would rather live comfortably with my X amount of $1 million and have peace of mind and be able to play for something more and be able to leave a legacy for my family and leave a if I'm that caliber player, a Hall of Fame type career or a long career, rather than just be known as A-Roids, you know, or fraud. So
yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure your parents would forgive you, see Rush, if you bought her a house off the water. I'm pretty sure she would forgive you. But I mean, A-Rod has his own private plane, see Rush. Do you think he really cares about the Hall of Fame, or do you think he really cares about his image?
I mean, that's him. He's an arrogant dude who may not care. You know, you asked about me. Me personally, I couldn't do it because I care about my family. I care about my friends. I care about my life. You know, A-Rod just, like, he just don't care. I don't trust no man with highlights in his head, for one. So he the type of dude I couldn't even be affiliated with. You know, so he a different breed of dude. So I don't know what that man thinking about. He obviously don't care. He lying about it anyway. And then he just beating around the bush. So yeah, he got his own plane, own jet, whatever. That's cool. $250 million man. Me personally, throw me a $70 million contract. Hey, I'm fine. I'll drive my sports car. I'll drive my truck. You know what? Me and my family will hop on a plane together. You know, in first class on Delta. You know, so I don't care. You know, personally, it's just that, you know, when he's arrogant and like people don't like him. You know, you gotta have something to live for. If he don't care, people don't like him. Just who cares, man?
Nah, I can't wait to get the T-Will on this one, because I'm not gonna tell it all. But I gotta be honest. I'll just give out one. Now, T-Will's type back in the day, he used to be in line waiting for them Jordans. You know what I'm saying? Before I even heard of an iPhone, my T-Will had one. So T-Will, would you take some PEDs, man, for that $200 million contract?
Great question, big fella. Great question. Now, way to preface it, you know what I'm saying? But what I will tell you is this, man. I'm 33 years old. If you'd have asked me between the ages of 19, maybe 26, 25-ish, right up in there, I may have given a different answer. But right now, being married, you know, four kids, my life is a little bit different. So to be honest with you guys, I would not take PEDs for the A-Rod contract at this day and age, because of a few reasons. You know, number one, first, morals, man. You know, I have morals, and clearly that's morally wrong. Two is character, and three is integrity. So those three things right there will clearly keep me away from taking the PEDs. I mean, I can't be selfish, you know, and if I did do it, I would be doing my family a disservice. You know, think about this, fellas. Whether Barry Bonds took PEDs or not, which he probably did, he's always going to be labeled as a cheater. Always. You know what I'm saying? Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, those guys are always going to be labeled as cheaters. So, that's going to stick with those guys to the end of time. Even when they're dead and gone, they'll still carry that label of being a cheater. And that's huge. That's huge. When I'm dead and gone, I don't want that label. You know, so think about Barry Bonds' son when he becomes a teenager and he wants to follow in his dad's footsteps and play baseball because that's all he's been around his whole life. It's going to be rough. It's going to be rough for him to hear every day when he's in high school on how his dad was a cheater. Or when he goes to college and plays baseball and those lights get a little bit brighter and now his media outlets ask him about his father's past and stuff like that. You know, and when he enters the professional ranks, you know, that's a whole new level. You know, so for it to affect my kids, you know, and have me to a point where I can't be around a sport, you know, I have a strong passion for, in Barry Bonds' case, you know, that would destroy me as a person, and that's not worth it. You know, that's just not worth it for me to have to hide out, you know, can't really show my face, you know, but I'm sitting on, you know, a 9-digit bank account. You know, it really is, to me, it's just not worth it. It really isn't, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, some of these other athletes that went down this road of taking PEDs and now are you know, in a corner and under a microscope and can't get into the Hall of Fame and stuff, I think some of those guys may really, you know, regret what they've done. And it's not even about, you know, just the PEDs. It's about the rules of baseball say don't take them. I don't care what the rule is. Like, if they had a rule that said, you know what, you can't eat white rice. It's illegal. You can't eat white rice. You know, if you do it, you're going to be labeled a cheater. No PEDs. Don't take them. So, I mean, I don't understand because, you know, rules are rules. And sometimes, you know, it's good to toe the line, get right up to that line and toe it, you know, but once you cross that line, you know, I think you leave yourself wide open, and that's what those guys did, and they have to live the rest of their lives as being labeled as cheaters.
Now, T-Will, you talk about your mentality changing as you get older, but, I mean, these guys take these PEDs. See, here's the difference. I think the NBA players and some NFL guys, T-Will, I think they care about the Hall of Fame. I think they care about legacy. I think they care about championships. These contracts, T-Will, are outrageous in baseball. They're outrageous. So what about the guy, T-Will, that is not even going to make the MLB if he doesn't take steroids? He's played baseball his whole life. It's his passion. What about that guy that say, hey, let me take these steroids. Let me take these PEDs to get a leg up so I can stay in the game that I love because I can't do another job?
Well, I think it goes back to some of the first things that I said. I mean, you know, speaking on morals, character, and integrity. You know, if you're that guy and you need that extra boost to make it to the majors, now you have a decision to make. You know, do I want to go this route and make it, or do I want to continue to give everything I have, use all the talent that the good Lord gave me, and if it's not good enough, you know what, it's not good enough, then I have to just move on. You know, so now you have that dilemma, and you're either going to do the right thing or you're going to do the wrong thing. So, and we always have choices and decisions, and when you're that close fine and you can smell it, you know, you've been in AAA for a couple years, you're right on the cusp of getting that call up, it has to be tough. But I think at the end of the day, when you take those things, those morals, characters, and integrity into consideration, that you have to make that right decision, because if you know you did it the right way, it feels that much better, you know, when you accomplish something.
C-Rush, before we move on, man, do you got anything to add besides the fact that you would just go first class on Delta with your family?
Nah, I mean, that's a lot like T-Will said, you know, you got to worry about your son. What he going, like, how is he going to be viewed? And, you know, and if he plays the same sport that you play, nah. Like, you know, having a jet is cool, but I'm going to still have millions of dollars. I can go spend mine. I can go to Family Video and somebody shake my hand rather than throw a syringe in my face. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, I think it's about moral and integrity when it comes to this situation. But I don't know what's going on in baseball. I just think that they got to crack down some way, shape, or form. Oh, real quick, before we do move on, let's bounce this back to you, T-Wheel. Do you think to eliminate cheating that it should just be, hey, the first time you're caught, you're done. You're kicked out. You can't play anymore.
No, I don't think so. But what I do think they should do, I don't think you should get a lifetime ban your first offense. You know, the first offense should be a 100-game suspension. Like, this is serious business. You get caught the first time, you get 100 games right off the bat. If you get caught again, you're done. I think it's just that simple. It shouldn't be 3, 4, 5 steps before you have a lifetime ban. Hey, look, we're not playing around. We're going to give you 100 games. We're going to hit your pockets real hard the first time. You do it again, you're done. I think it should be just that simple, short and sweet. But also, if you're going to be that strict on them, they have to make sure these tests are pretty accurate and they're seeing the PEDs for sure and not just going off symptoms like elevated testosterone and all that other stuff. So I think they have to really see it, specifically before they hand out these strict suspensions, 100 games and lifetime ban.
Now, I agree. You got to make sure you have your ducks all in a row before you start suspending or kicking guys out. But, T-Wheel, I would say this, though. When you say 100-game suspension, now, we know baseball. You can play baseball for a long time. You know, you can just play it for a long time. So I personally still think it, even if we went your way 100 games, I still think people would say, hey, even if I'm caught 100 games, I still get that contract. So do you think that this way would actually help, or do you still think we would have the same cheating?
Well, if nothing else, these cats would definitely think twice about cheating. You know, because even if you do get caught the first time, and let's say some team does give you that $100 million contract or whatever the case may be, if you get caught again, all of that is voided out anyway. So, I mean, because it's a lifetime ban. So, I mean, I think, you know, before guys make that decision, it will make them think twice. And you have to understand this too, Fon. If you're that guy on the cusp of making it, that 100 games hurts. That 100 games hurts. You know, if you're a mid-level player and you get 100 games, you might not play another major league game. You might be a minor league player for the rest of your career. So it can be turn your career one way or the other. So I think that would be some type of deterrent for those guys using PEDs.
See, Rush, you like the ladder system that T brings up, or just kick them out?
I wouldn't say kick them out. Hit that pocketbook. You know, I guarantee you this. When A-Rod went to Texas and he got that $235 million, if he tested positive and you say that team has an option to void the contract, I bet you wouldn't take it then. You take away their money, that's what you're taking away. So rather than gangs, take the money away. That's what they're playing for. If they're not playing for Hall of Fame, like you said, hit that pocketbook. Then they're thinking different about it.
Hit that pocketbook. T-Wheel, real quick before we move on. Now, Adrian Peterson said that there's players in the NFL using HGH. They should start testing. Watch what I say. Watch what I tell you. You'll catch guys. I hope this is not true, T-Wheel. But do you think AP got something going here? You think these NFL guys are on some HGH?
I put it like this. If guys are using PEDs in baseball, HGH is flowing in the NFL. That thing is flowing.
Oh,
it is flowing.
I hope that's not the case. When he said that, and plus he only missed about 9 months off the ACL, and he comes back and runs for 1 million yards.
It's not his system.
So I thought that was kind of strange for him to say that, but I hope that that's not right, man. But anyway, okay, let's go on to our final topic of today. Just want to read a quick quote by Andrew Bynum, being in Cleveland. Open quote, "I haven't had the opportunity to play for a city that is really just going to stand up and really support the team. I'm super excited, and I can't wait to see what it's like," close quote. Now, everyone automatically, because the Lakers are the Lakers, C-Rush, they just say, hey, well, this is a shot at Laker fans. Now, Laker fans are cool, calm. They sit back. They relax. They're movie stars. They sit front side with sunglasses on. You don't know if they're asleep or actually watching the game. But honestly, I know Philadelphia 76ers aren't on that same level as the Lakers, but this guy just sat on the bench with an afro all season and didn't play at all. I would be more offended, C-Rush, if I'm a Philadelphia Sixer fan.
Yeah. This dude didn't play a game. didn't do a thing. He didn't. I mean, what was the point of the trade? You know, he didn't. You want to come out here and say fans in the city, why, you got your feelings hurt because the fans booed you because you didn't even look like you played? You was out bowling too much? That's a slap in the face of those fans, and we all know how Philly fans are passionate. And if you're not doing what's right, if they don't think they're getting what they need, they'll let you know about it. So he need to have thicker skin. Cleveland, like, yeah, they gonna appreciate him because you signed in Cleveland. Of course, they're going to say, hey, glad to have you here, brother. Yeah, Philly fans aren't standing for that. And even in L.A. fans, when he was doing his little dance out there, they were leery of him, but they still accepted him. So if this is a shot at the Lakers fans, that's I don't know what he's complaining about there. At the Philly fans, that's a shame on him because all those fans wanted was for you to play. Whether you play three games, three or 82, show that you actually want to get back on the court. He was just sitting there in a sports coat in a dirty afro just watching the games. You know, and that's a slight to those passionate Philadelphia fans. We're talking about the same fans who booed Santa Claus. You know they crazy. So if you can't take that criticism, you know, and wanna say something about it, you didn't do anything about it. So you should just keep your mouth shut and say, hey, that happened, let's just move on.
Yeah, T. Will, I'll go right to you on this one. You heard the quote. Like I said, obviously we bounced it right off to Lakers fans. But here's the thing. Philadelphia just watched you sit on a bench, and they were supposed to have a really good team this year, T. Will, with a dominant center, and it never happened.
Well, I'm just going to be quite honest, guys. This was nothing more than him taking a shot at Laker fans. I understand he was in Philadelphia this season, sitting on the bench, best seat in the house, and he was getting paid for it. You know, that's all it was. He stopped by Philly for a cup of coffee. That was it. That's it. I don't even think he recognizes Philly fans. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. This was a straight shot at Lakers fans, guys. You know, and him sounding off like that was just him being, you know, bitter and immature. You know, even if he does feel this way, you know, as a professional athlete or just an athlete in general, man, keep it to yourself. You know, why burn a bridge? And realistically, fellas, in this sense, he burnt two bridges with one stone because now he involved Clipper fans to me because he didn't say Laker fans. He said a city, which includes all of Los Angeles. So who knows what's going to happen in Cleveland, whether he's a bust, whether, you know, he turns out to do a great job. When it comes time for contract talk, you know, no one in L.A. may want him. So now he may have just lost two teams. You know, if for Bynum, you know, take some sound advice from me, man. Shut up, don't say anything, and go show the city of Cleveland and the rest of the NBA fans that you can still play at a high level. Man, actions speak louder than words. You know, don't say you want to walk in and assume a leadership role, you know, on this Cleveland Cavalier team. Shut up and just go lead by example, and then maybe somebody might follow you. You know, common denominator of all of this, Bynum, is just shut up. You know, just go play basketball and do what you're supposed to do in the locker room, and everything else will fall into place, man.
Now, T. Will, somebody out of the organization of Philadelphia 76ers, they apologized for the whole Bynum situation. Now, let me say this. Now, we all know this, T. Will. You can't trade someone that's injured. Like, you can't trade them. So, a lot of this, like, a lot of people put this blame on Andrew Bynum. T. Will, a lot of people do. And I'm not saying his actions are good. But T. Will, I gotta be honest. This guy should have apologized. Because T. Will, I put this on the 76ers. Because bottom line, T. Will, they traded, he was injured, and they gambled that he would be back healthy. So I'll be honest with you. I put the blame, and you're right, T. He walked in Philadelphia, T. Will. He probably had a hotel room the whole year. He probably did. He stepped in for a cup of coffee, knew he wasn't even staying there at all. But T. Will, what kind of accountability do the organization of the Sixers have to do with this situation?
Well, like you said, Fon, they gambled. They gambled and lost. You know, they shot some dice seven out, lose all your money. You know, so, yeah, I mean, and a lot of times, Fon, when we talk about some of these NBA players, we've had discussions on you know, Josh Smith, Dwight Howard, Andrew Bynum. The one thing that I'm seeing and that we're having discussions about some of these players, and the one thing I see in common with them is none of these guys went to college. you know, these are all guys that came straight from high school. So some of the things that happen, they're just not mature. They haven't went through a certain process. They skipped a part of life. You know, they went from graduating high school right into I'm the man. I'm that guy. You know, it's a 4 to 5 year process in between that these guys all skipped. You know, so when they do get older and by age become adults and grown, you know, if they don't have that maturity developed, I mean, things like this happen. When you're wrong, you don't apologize for your wrongdoings.
Yeah. See, Rush, do you think T. Will got a point here where he talk about, you know, when we talk about comments like this, do you think that that's a huge gap because these guys, they don't go to college?
It's true. You know, if we all didn't go through that college process and we just got our jobs that we have now without having to go through hell and back, without having to suffer, without having to go through adversity, without having to go through anything, we wouldn't be the same person that we are now. So imagine that on a higher scale of millions of dollars. So, you know, T. Will has a valid point. And that's very true because they're coming in as kids and they're getting treated like men, you know, when they come into the NBA. Everything's paid for, they don't have to do nothing, never have to lift a finger. So they have this elitist attitude. So, you know, and that really hits close to home with those guys. And another thing is, you know, like you said, yeah, they did trade for damaged goods, but you know what? At the same time, if Andrew Bynum showed that he wanted to be there, if he even rented a house for a couple years there, or rented rather than stay in a hotel like you say he probably did, he would have been a maxed out player. Philly would have maxed him out. He would have been getting the max deal from the Philadelphia 76ers if he even showed that he wanted to be there. So that's why I think that mind frame is goofy, because he said banks still open everywhere. Yeah, that's a cute thing to say. But you know what? You could have been a max player for that organization, for some very passionate fans. They stood behind AI regardless of what he did in his personal life. So I'm not saying putting him on that same level, but these are fans who are going to stand behind you regardless. And if you don't stand up for them, they're going to do exactly what they said. They're going to try to sue you for the money that you played like they tried to do, that they paid you. So it's a mentality that they have in an elitist attitude.
Yep, that NBA mentality. Yes, I agree 100%. T. Will, you got something to add before I close this thing out, man?
No, I'm gonna take some advice I gave Bynum. I'm gonna shut up and just sit back.
All right. Send us an email, WilsonRushPodcast@gmail.com. It's the summer. I know football isn't going yet and basketball ended, but hey, shoot us a topic and we will have no problem tackling it the legal way. See, Rush, you have a good show, man.
Oh yeah, I might have to start doing my show from 7 Mile more often.
Yeah, no illegal tackles on the Wilson Rush podcast, man. T. Will, how you feel, man?
I feel pretty good. You know, had a pretty good show. I didn't knock it out the park like I really wanted to. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't want to get fined or anything for hitting it too hard. But you know, it's nothing like bringing a show, man, from the front seat of the 2013 Charger, man, to the internet.
Hey, that's right, man. Or you don't want to, you hit it too far, man. We're going to have to give you a drug test.
I yes, start sir. Testing.
Well, all right, man. We hope you guys have a good weekend and have a good Sunday tomorrow and back to work on Monday. We always represent 7 Mile as usual.
7 Mile.
And we out.
7 Mile.
DJ Clips, Rev City, let's go. Wilson Rush Podcast with your host Wilson Rush, also with T. Lib, Vaughn Wilson, and C. Rush. They say I'm ballin' like a murderer. What up, Detroit? They say I'm ballin' like 7 Mile. Rev City, your world. DJ Clips, we the best, the chemist music crew. They say I'm ballin' like I'm earned. Go hard in the paint, but I'm still crossover. The Rush Wilson.